The reading is in two parts again. The first part is from Exodus chapter 20, verses 8 to 11. This is on page 78 in the Pew Bibles. Remember the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work. But the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, neither you nor your son or daughter, nor your manservant or maidservant, nor your animals, nor the alien within your gates. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea, and all that is in them, but he rested on the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. The second part of the reading is from Genesis chapter 2, verses 1 to 3, which is on page 4. Thus the heavens and the earth were completed in all their vast array. By the seventh day, God had finished the work he had been doing. So on the seventh day, he rested from all his work. And God blessed the seventh day and made it holy, because on it he rested from all the work of creating that he had done. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God.
Good evening. Great to see you. Really, really good to see you. I'm going to start with a story. You may have heard it before, but I think it's still a good story. There was a business executive talking on his mobile phone. So the man's walking across a beautiful beach. I don't know if you've ever been on the phone walking across the beach. I have a few times on holiday, but not so much doing work. But he was doing some work. And behind his phone conversation, all he can hear is the sound of waves and of the sound of seagulls crying. And ahead of him, up the beach, is a man wearing really simple clothes, dozing. He's dozing in the shade of his fishing boat that's been pulled up onto the beach. He passes, and the fisherman just stirs a bit, and the executive, who's now waiting for a call to be returned, decides to make conversation. The weather's great! There are plenty of fish! Why are you lying around here instead of going out and catching more? The fisherman replies gently, I caught enough this morning. But just imagine, the executive says, if you went out 3 or 4 times a day and brought home 3 or 4 times as many fish, do you know what could happen? Puzzled, the simple fisherman shakes his head. Why, says the executive, becoming really enthusiastic by now, you could buy yourself a motorboat. Then after, say, a couple of years, you could buy a second one. Then after 3 years, you could have a cutter or two. And just think, maybe one day you could get a freezing plant. And then you might eventually be able to get your own helicopter. Then you could go out and trace the shoals of fish and increase your productivity and guide your fleet of cutters. It would be amazing. You could even acquire a fleet of trucks to ship all your fish to the capital to sell them. And then, what then? Asks the fisherman. Well, then you'd be able to take a holiday and lie on the beach and look at the view and doze in the sunshine. We look today at the fourth commandment. The fourth commandment in those 10 rules for living that God gives Moses and the people of the wilderness in Exodus. We've just read it. Remember the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. I don't know about you, but I wonder if we might find this commandment either overwhelming in its demands or faintly ridiculous in its distance from the reality that some of us see in the world today. I wonder if you're hoping, as I stand here and you listen, that I'm going to find some theological way of saying, oh, don't worry, we don't need to take it literally. you know, God knew that society would develop and progress. And actually God's saying to us, well, make sure you find maybe 5 minutes in every day. Or perhaps he's saying it's a really good idea to take all of your holiday. And, oh yeah, do turn your phone off from time to time. Maybe you should read the Bible on the train in the morning to take God into your everyday. Don't look at emails or play Tetris or whatever the new version of Tetris is, Candy Crush or whatever it is on your phone. Think about God. Bring Sabbath into your journey. I'm really sorry, but that's not what I'm going to say. Because I think our task is a bit more fundamental, and I think it is critical. And I need to confess to you today that this is a difficult topic for me to preach on. I have a demanding job. I know you think I work one day a week, but actually it's just slightly more than that. And I'm a working mum, have a home to run. There are pressures of life. I get that, I really do. And actually, I want, in a sense, to sit with you today and explore this bit of theology together as a community. I think it's for all of us. The theory on this subject is fairly simple, isn't it? We need to take some rest. But I stand with you in finding this issue of godly time wisdom difficult to live out. And there are much better examples of lived out Sabbath, even within this church. And I encourage you, if this is something you struggle with, look around you and find the people who are doing this well and ask them how and why they have oriented their life in that way. Because actually sharing our own experiences is helpful and really important. But we need to know that we're in this together. And firstly, we need to say that this commandment, remember the Sabbath day by keeping it holy, is not meant to be a burden. And if we go out of this church this evening thinking, oh no, that's another thing I've got wrong, then we haven't quite nailed it. Sabbath isn't meant to be a burden. It's not a trial or a test to pass to show that we really love God. Another thing on the list. Sabbath is a gift. J. John says, the Sabbath is God's gift to us. If human beings weren't so distorted by sin, God could perhaps have dealt with this topic in the Bible simply as a manufacturer's recommendation, along the lines of, your creator advises you that you will function better if you take one day off in seven. The fact is, because God knows that taking a day off is so much against our desires, he's made it a rule. In this commandment, I don't think we have a nice idea or a sensible suggestion. I think God orders us to take a break. But the word writ large across much of our society and our community and our businesses and our schools and our homes is how? It's all very well, isn't it, to say we need to take a break, but the world out there just moves so fast. If we step off, we'll get left behind. We won't achieve all the things we need to achieve. Modern life can feel relentless. The responsibilities and requirements we face day to day can seem overwhelming. So much so that taking a rest becomes an impossibility. I was looking at the BBC website just earlier this week and came across this video, which was shot in America, but that doesn't let us off. Have a look at this.
Miss taking time off?
No. You always have to be available, no matter what.
I could have 15, but I only took 5 just because I felt busy. There's not usually someone to do the work for you, so typically you come back home to a mountain load of work that you left behind.
You save those days up just in the event of an emergency. Maybe a child needs emergency surgery, or maybe yourself that may need emergency surgery. You want to always have that time available to you.
Even when I'm on vacation, I can't relax because I'm worried about work getting done, so I'm always on the telephone, texting or whatever to whoever I need to, and never relaxed.
Well, if you're working all the time, you get burnt out really fast. So if you take your vacation time, if you go have fun, spend time with your family, go to the clubs, do anything, then, you know, you kind of reset your brain. You got to have your quiet time, got to have your time to do what you need to do.
I'm from Germany.
And why 30 days?
I was allowed, I wanted to, and I needed to.
And you stress out about coming back?
I know I have a lot to do, but my colleagues helped me during my vacation days, so it's not going to be that overwhelming.
Sometimes it's hard to take a break. And all this ceaseless rushing around inevitably has a physical effect on us. Before we think of our faith and our spiritual life in a sense, although we shouldn't separate the two, I just want to think about our physical body. If your physical body could talk, what would it say to you at the moment? What would it be asking you to do? I wonder how many of the answers would be, oh, just slow down a bit. Just take a break. Our body is a complicated piece of kit, and we only get one. You can append bits and change bits. The medicine has come on a long way, but most of us just have the one standard issue. And if we ignore the designer's manual, when we don't listen to God's directions for proper maintenance, we run a risk of malfunction. I don't think this is news to many of us, but the question remains, is it really possible to do Sabbath, to take a proper rest? Isn't that the stuff of a bygone era? Well, let's have a look together. You see, the thing is, I think to have a clear idea of Sabbath, we need to have a clear theology of time. And that's a question I'm going to ask you now. What is time? How would you define time? What do you think it is? I actually genuinely want you to engage with this question. Have a think about it. If you're an external processor like me, bug the person next to you to say it out loud. But just have a think, just for a minute. What is time? Now, some of you will have come up with very scientific definitions. You'll have come up with definitions like, it's the difference between, or the duration between one event and another event. That's a summary of what it says in the Oxford Dictionary, because it took me five goes of reading the Oxford Dictionary definition of time to actually understand it. Some of you will have come up with positive things, but I wonder if actually we might have a negative view of time. I don't know if you do. My granny, love her, my granny never used to call time time. She always used to call it the enemy. She would genuinely say, how's the enemy, instead of saying, what time is it? And I wonder how many of us make a similar connotation, perhaps not quite as bluntly as my granny, but think about time negatively. I wonder if it has connotations of pressure. It's the thing we never have enough of. We wish we had more of. You know, technology has achieved wonders, hasn't it, for us in almost every area. You can find an entire library on a web page. You can watch a British sporting defeat across the other side of the world in glorious technicolor. Sorry, I hope I'm not worrying people who are about to get stuck into the Rugby World Cup. And you can be in contact with your mates, your office, your boss, the value of your stocks and shares, your property price, or your supermarket every moment of the day. So many labor-saving, time-saving devices must surely mean, mustn't it, that we have oodles of leftover spare time on our hands. After all, surely that's the point of a labor-saving, time-saving device. But it's not the reality, is it? because in all of the technological creation, the one thing we haven't been able to create more of is time. It remains for many people the most precious commodity we have. But let's just for a moment see time in a very positive light. I want us to think about creation. When God created the world, that was not a single event many thousands, millions of years ago. That wasn't a one-off thing, once and forever. God's creative act of bringing the world into existence is a continuous process. God called the world into being, and that call goes on. In a book entitled Sabbath, a man called Abraham Joshua Heschel, who's a Jewish rabbi, says this: "There is a present moment because God is present. Every instant is an act of creation. A moment is not a terminal ending, but a flash, a signal of another beginning. Time is perpetual innovation, a synonym for continuous creation. Time is God's gift to the world of space." Time can be our way of understanding creation. If creation was all done back on day one, we wouldn't need time. It would all be done. With time, we can understand God's continuous process of making and developing the world. As we move through time, we witness the unfolding of creation. We can also see time positively in that every single week, you and I have a gift of 168 hours. If that doesn't sound quite enough, it might be nicer to talk about it in terms of 10,080 minutes, if you really want to. It's actually quite a lot of minutes. But unlike money or things, as we've said, we can't earn more. Everyone gets the same amount. No matter how hard you work or whatever you do, your allocation is still the same. Time does not operate on capitalist economics. We're all equal in the face of the clock. And so, just as those with limited amounts of money need to put together a budget, those of us with limited amounts of time need to do the same. How much do I need for sleeping? How much do I need to earn a living? How much do I need to give away to other people? How much do I need to give to God? You know, God gives us great freedom in how to budget our time. He calls us to different uses of the same gift. We all have different gifts and skills and talents, and God calls us to use it and go in different places. And actually, with relative freedom. But there is one clear instruction. 1/7 of it is not to be filled with work. 1/7 of that time is needed to feed your soul. 1/7 of that time is for rest. What's time? Time is a gift. Time is a sign of God continuing to be creative. And we are called to be stewards of our time, just as much as we are called to be stewards of our money. And because God knew that would be difficult, he gave us a clear command. You need to rest, and one day a week is the right amount. And if we find that our 168 hours or our 10,080 minutes aren't sufficient for all the things that need to be done, well, we might need to be budgeting differently. We might need to set a new budget. Is God asking you to reevaluate your use of time? And if he is, how much of it is on the table for him to ask you to reevaluate? Just over 10 years ago, I sensed a call to a part-time role in the local church, not an ordained role, just something different. And I really wanted to take on the role that was being offered. I already had a full and demanding role. I worked up in the City of London. But it crossed my mind, well, if I do the city thing for 5 days a week, which was five pretty full-on days, and then I did this for a day and maybe a day, I could fit it all in. I really began to convince myself that I could do both, which of course was daft and stupid. But what I didn't let myself think of for quite some time was, I wonder if I can change things around. Is it possible to change that 5 days a week? Could I do it differently? Now, that's quite an unusual thing to think of in the job that I was in. Not many people work a part-time role in that environment, and even less people go to ask for one because there's all this expectation of working absolutely every hour. But I sensed this call, and I thought, well, the only way this is possible, and still to be able to say and keep within a vaguely godly use of time, was to ask. So I went to ask my boss, thinking, well, this is a bit daft. I know the answer's going to be no. And lo and behold, he said, well, why don't you give it a try? And I did. Now, I do not want to hold myself up as a paragon of virtue, because actually that was quite a soul-searching exercise, because I had assumed that he would say no. So in the asking, I was like, all right, God, I'll go and ask, because it's not going to happen. And it did, which obviously meant quite a reduction in my salary. So I had to think through that quite carefully. But there's sometimes creative ways of being able to do the things that we feel called or a sense or a need or a requirement to do that might actually mean they have a cost to them, but might mean that we can go ahead and still keep a godly perspective on our use of time. I just wonder if God might be asking you to think about whether you can budget your time differently. And so if we do manage to budget our time and we do preserve a day for Sabbath, what does it look like? Does it always look like that? Lying with your head on a pillow, dozing, having read half of a book. The thing is, it will look different for everybody. Because God still even gives us freedom in our rest. He gives us freedom in our rest. He says, remember the Sabbath and keep it holy. But what we are not to do is go down the route of being legalistic. In the time when Jesus was alive, the Jewish people had made over 1,500 separate rules about how to keep the Sabbath. And move forward to the 21st century, I have a Jewish Orthodox friend, and he keeps the Sabbath very, very carefully every week. I worked in a law firm that was very much founded on Jewish principles, and so actually in the winter lots of the people would leave just after lunchtime on a Friday to make sure they were home before dusk. And one of the other things that this person would do was he had a special belt made, and part of his belt, the buckle, incorporated his key to his front door. Because you're not allowed, when you keep all of these rules that still exist in some cases around Jewish tradition, you're not allowed to carry anything. So if he went out of his house on the Sabbath to go to the synagogue, for instance, which is a very good reason to go out, and he wasn't allowed to carry his key, what he had done was incorporate it into a piece of clothing. So that was wearing clothes, and that was allowed. Now, I don't want to make unhelpful comments about practices that still go on today, but to me, that seems just about rule-keeping. And this isn't meant to be about freedom. This is meant to be about release. It's meant to be about rest. And so if I were to say to you, well, you need to spend 2 hours in church, and then you need to spend an hour praying, and then you need to make sure that whatever you do, you don't exert any energy, you don't exert yourself at all, and you must go and see somebody who you're not very keen on and spend some time with them, and we set out this list of rules about Sabbath, it's not Sabbath. Sabbath is about feeding our souls. Sabbath, the word itself, just means stop. It's a verb, Sabbath, it's a Hebrew verb to mean to cease. And each of us has a role in finding out what the thing is that feeds our soul. The only thing I would say about this is actually it might not be the day to feed your adrenaline habit because of the physical side of what we're called to do in this rhythm of rest. If your sense of fun or joy is throwing yourself down the side of a mountain bike, we had a video this morning, Phil showed a video of mountain biking, like the wrong move, and you're down the edge of a sheer cliff. I have to say, I'm fairly sure that's not a Sabbath rest, because it's actually still feeding that adrenaline that runs the rest of the week. But you will know that better than I do. What feeds your soul? Quite often we sing, I loved the first song that we sang, O Lord my God, when I in awesome wonder. And often when I hear that at conferences and things, we don't sing the second verse. I was really pleased this evening that we sang the second verse. When I walk through the trees, I can't remember, when through the woods and forest glades I wander and hear the birds sing sweetly in the trees, when I look down from lofty mountain grandeur and hear the brook and feel the gentle breeze, it's at that moment my heart sings, "How great thou art." What is it that makes your heart sing, "How great thou art"? Those are the things we need to be making time for in Sabbath rest. One of the things that is traditional is to enjoy others in your Sabbath rest. One of the Jewish, not so much tradition, actually, this is a biblical-based thing, is to enjoy others around the table. The Sabbath meal is a very key part, and I uphold that. Enjoying others in your Sabbath rest is important. And of course, enjoying God in your Sabbath rest is important too. Turn your attention to him. Bask in his love. It's all right to do that, to recharge your batteries. There are some people for whom Sabbath rest still may feel like a dream. If you have young children, if you are a carer for somebody who needs 24-hour care, Sabbath rest might feel like another burden. But I just want us to go back to that, or just think back to the reading from Exodus, which says this. Hold on. Remember the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. It's a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall do no work, neither you, your son, your daughter, your male or female servant, your animals, or any foreigner residing in your towns. It's not just our own Sabbath rest that we are obliged to protect. Sometimes we need to look out for those people for whom Sabbath rest is pretty tricky and work out whether we have a bit spare to share with them. Is there an hour or two at some point then you could go and sit with a sick loved one so that that person can have some freedom to do whatever feeds their soul? Is it time to offer to go and make the picnic for a young family and go out and spend the afternoon with the children, with friends, to give mum or dad a break? Sabbath is a community event. In a moment, we'll pray and we'll have just some time to think about this for ourselves. I just want to finish with some words actually from J. John, who writes on this in relation to the Ten Commandments. He says, "Let me end this discussion of God's day of rest by pointing out to you that it represents a deep challenge. The issue that this commandment addresses is a fundamental one. Who controls our time? By keeping God's day of rest, we proclaim to ourselves and to the world that God runs our lives. If he is Lord, he is Lord of our time. That's why there's a battle in this area. It's not simply a question of legislation on trading hours or about cultural practices. This is about lordship of our lives, our time, our culture, of everything. Is God calling you to do your time budget differently? He might even be calling you to start again, to put it all on the table and give him 1/7 of all of those 168 hours. Is that something you can do? Shall we stand together?